So Heather said, Amanda, was there enough poop discussion in this book for you? The system of three grossed me out. To answer the first question, no, I have a new standard. But yeah, I didn't even understand the system of three till it was spelled out even more clearly at the end. And I was like, oh my word, what does that mean? Like how close were I it's like that's a little gross.
Not want pigs snuffling underneath the latrine. I don't think I could
Oh,
handle
I
that.
would be, I don't know, I don't need to go into detail about this. Terrified to drop my drawers right over a pig. No, ma'am. I could not.
Welcome to Book Fair. We help thoughtful women find wholesome, life-affirming books for themselves and their families.
Are you tired of picking up the latest new release and finding it full of junk you don't want in your life? You are in the right place.
This show shares curated content, and we do it together within a fun, book-loving community. So pull up a chair at the table and join the feast.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Book Fair Podcast. Today, we are joined by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of our closest friends here on Zoom to discuss the book, The Island of Sea Women. We are so excited for this discussion and so excited that we're going to get to share it with you. So we are just going to start out for a few minutes sharing. Elizabeth, what did you think of the book?
I loved it. Y'all know I love a good hard story. I don't know if this is wretched or not, but there was a pretty rough scene in there. I don't want anybody to misunderstand and think that I love reading things like that. It's more that I feel it's important. It was really important. And the book would not have been without that. So I love to read stories about women doing hard things. That's what this was. I love to read stories that are going to help me understand someone on the other side of the world. That's what this was. I love reading stories that fill in a gap of history that I knew nothing about. And that's certainly what this was. I remember just being like, so hold on a minute. Is this why we have North Korea, South Korea? It is. I've never even questioned when did they get mad at each other and split? And then to know the backstory about it was a big gap in just my general world education. So overall, this was such a good book, and I recommended it to a client today for her book club, actually. I was like, just not only do you have to read it, you need to make all your friends read it. Bossy.
How about you, Amanda?
Well, I had a rough process going through this book, and to be honest, I just finished reading it a few hours ago. So I'm still
fresh.
Processing. It's fresh. I'm still processing. I wasn't sure going through it where the author was coming from in terms of worldview and what is she saying or what is she asking. I didn't totally trust the author, especially coming upon that scene. I just wasn't expecting it. And so I felt a little blindsided and I was a little mad at her. But getting through to the end, it is redeemed. There are such good things to talk about after reading this book. I had to miss the Friday night book club in person we did. I'm still not getting out at night most of the time. So I am so thankful we have this opportunity and that you guys came on because I need this. I need to hear what y'all think. So when it's the right time, Trisha, I can go into more why I had a rough process through it. But
I think that would be great for you to talk about more now.
Okay. Well, this is not the kind of book I would pick up on my own. I love historical fiction and I love history. And I don't mind walking through tough things with characters, but it was bad timing for me. You know, sometimes things are just not the right time. I had scheduled to read this out over the course of a couple weeks, and the first week was a really rough health week for me. And so first of all, that's one reason. Secondly, it kind of crammed a lot. So I had to push through really quickly. So normally I would have put the book down and not gotten in too far. But I'm kind of glad I had to push through because I don't know if I would have picked it back up again. So sometimes just, you know, good things hit you at the wrong time. And I think that was the main thing for me, because everything, I don't know, I kind of had a bad attitude because I wasn't feeling well. And I was
grown up mothers never have a bad attitude.
Oh, I know. I know. I was so cynical about the intentions behind the book. And I had a hard time getting into the world of the book and letting go of reacting based on what's going on in the news and in our world right now. And I normally don't have a hard time with that, but because this is such a modern book, a recent book, it was historical fiction, but I felt like it was leaning more on historical. So it was real things that happened. I think that also made it a little bit harder for me to straddle that. So I think that was another element for me. And I know that there were people in the Facebook group that had a hard time and didn't finish it. And I'm like right there with you. I totally get it. Totally get it. And maybe after this discussion, you might say, you know, when I'm in a different place, I might pick it back up.
Yeah. Books can be a lot about timing, for sure. So that was just such a great lead in. I would just like to ask, did anyone have a hard time with this as well? Were there things that were challenging for you that you would like to discuss? Okay, Kelly, why don't you tell us?
I'm not sure you want me to go into all of my feelings about this book. If you ask my child, all I've done is gone on and on about, this is the most miserable book I have ever read in my life. Coming on the heels of Everything Sad is Untrue, which I found miserable, but at least it had some humor. I just have a heart, and exactly what Amanda was saying about the fact that these things really went on just adds to the miserableness, that people really went through this, that people were doing, so much of that was people doing that to their own countrymen. I mean, when I got to the end, I rewound it a couple of minutes. I'm like, that can't be the end. That cannot be all there is to this little tiny minute bit of redemption. I really struggled with it. And I struggled with the fact that I'm on the side of this character for a good portion of it. And as you see, as she lets her anger and her unforgiveness, and she just hardens and hardens her heart to the point of turning away from her younger daughter. And then it was hard to even, I was like, well, now I don't even want to read her story because she's just, she's their biggest part of her own problem. So yeah, it was hard. So I agree with Amanda, but I mean, I do see so much worth in it, but I'm not sure that was what I needed in my life right now.
Kelly, I'm right there with you. Like for so much of the book, I was angry. I wasn't so much sad. I was more angry through the book and mostly at the author. But now I'm forgetting the main character, not Young Sook. I was angry at the other one most of the time. And then the twist, which I thought was great writing, then I was mad at Young Sook. So, but the ending, because I wanted to bring that up too. So I'm glad you did, Kelly. So can you expand a little bit more, if you want, your thoughts on the ending? Why? Because I wasn't totally satisfied with that ending either.
Oh, it just seemed like after all of that anger and hatred that she had in her heart, that so quickly she did turn it around. And then that was just that. And it was just this, you know, I don't know. And I think I meant to go look at it on Kindle so I could see it visually, because sometimes that helps me a little bit as well, instead of just listening to the audiobook and all of a sudden the little cheerful music was playing. Right. You just listen to the sea women. I'm like, wait, what? That can't be. I don't know what the redemptive quality would have been to make it better for me, but those are just some of the things I struggled with.
Yeah. I thought of it as a scales fall from her eyes moment. I see we have a lot of hands raised.
Mija, thank you. Mija is your name. I thought it came quickly, like it ended quickly to me too. And I thought it was almost anticlimactic because it happened quickly for me. And so it seems sudden, but then also she's going to have to forgive herself too. Like, when you forgive someone, like she's got to see the role she played in this. And I wasn't totally convinced that she saw that. And so it kind of made her forgiveness a little bit unfulfilling for me.
Yeah.
Because, like, if she really realizes and acknowledges her role in this, I mean, that then that's a whole nother issue for her to forgive herself about that.
I would love to share a point that's not my own thinking. Someone mentioned Friday night. The fact that no one was allowed to talk about this makes it hard to move through healing and hard to forgive. When you're not even allowed to acknowledge this happened, our process is to talk about it, talk about it, talk about it, until we don't need to talk about it. And when you're not allowed to even say it happened, how can you forgive? I hope I'm never in that spot.
Heidi, I can see you waving your head up and down.
Yes, profusely. Especially the idea of not talking about things. Like, a lot of our grandparents were born during this time frame, and how many of them can you think of who are not good at processing in a verbal way?
A great point.
Like, that was that generation. It is a new and modern thing for us to process, as we are doing right this moment, in community. Learning to talk through some things. One of my children passed away a couple years ago, and I think the most helpful thing that we learned to do during that process was to talk about the grief. Like, I could not move through it without the verbal processing of it. Even to this day, that is true. And if I get to a point where I haven't talked about it in a while, that I feel that kind of building up inside me. And so I think because they weren't even allowed to say anything was a huge factor to how they themselves have been processing. And I think also it might be a Western construct for us to want to talk about this. I'm not sure that other cultures have traditionally been that way. At least in my experience, I've seen that to be true. And so I think I'm willing to give them a little bit more, at least these fictional characters, a little bit more grace in how we are seeing them process their traumas in a way that might feel really foreign to us and kind of delayed and stilted. And so that, that I really think is more how I tended to view what was going on as I was reading it. So.
Really, really good thoughts. Angelina.
Yeah, I was on the topic of the ending being, I agree. It felt abrupt to me also. And most of the comments I think have been focused on the idea that forgiveness came very quickly. And I would agree with that. But I think for me, what really helped to make it feel abrupt and unfulfilling was that there was so much buildup and foreshadowing with Mija that there was a reason for what she did. And that this reason, while not completely excusing it, and she still carried a lot of guilt about it, that this reason would help Young Suk to process it, and to, and that what was the phrase, that understanding would, that knowledge would lead to understanding or something like that.
To understand everything is to forgive.
Yes. So there was all this buildup and all this foreshadowing of Mija had a really good reason. And if Young Suk just knew, forgiveness could happen. But when it when we finally got to that point, when the author finally gave us, here's her reason, it felt very deflated because we as the readers already knew her reason. It felt like there was supposed to be some sort of big reveal there that she had been abused by her husband and he was controlling her, and that's why she couldn't save her friend and her family. And while during that reveal moment we did get some more information and some more insight into their dynamic, it was not anything unexpected, or and it really wasn't much bigger than what we as the readers already knew, and almost what Young Suk should have known had she been paying attention. And so I think that left me at least feeling unfulfilled and, like I said, a bit deflated at the big reveal moment that I already knew this and why is this going to change anything? And then it did change things. But it also, and I think also the fact that Mijia was already gone and there wasn't a moment for them to come back together and express forgiveness and have that reunification. Yeah. And I get that that's real life. And, but it made for a really sad ending of an already really sad book. I did find beauty and value in what I read, even though it was hard, but I wish that the ending had, I do feel good about the book. I enjoyed the book, but I think I would feel better about it and more certain of my opinion of it if I had had that big, fulfilling, redemptive moment at the end.
Yeah.
So I
maybe they could have talked about them going swimming together a little bit. I did kind of feel like, oh, how was the swim? But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And I see that. I do feel like there is a shift when she finds out how deep, when she goes from Mijia has a bruise occasionally. Yeah. He probably hits her once in a while, to the first day they met, he raped her. This was constant physical abuse of both her and her child. And that she literally was debating in her mind. Like, I don't even think she was debating. I think she was in her head saying, I cannot bring your children into this house.
Yeah.
I think that's what I understood from it.
Even if they're about to die, which she thought they probably were, but she was still like, how could I live with bringing my best friend's children into my house and then watching them be beaten day after day? Like, it just wasn't in that moment. She was just like, if he doesn't say yes, I cannot do that. And to me, that's a big shift. Like, that's a big change in perspective for her to really understand.
I can see that,
where her friend was coming from. So I can, to me, it does, even though it wasn't like some completely unknown reveal, to me, it is a perspective shifting reveal. Yeah. Erin, what are you thinking?
Yeah. I think for me, the shift at the end wasn't so much for young Sook, as for the reader just understanding the depth of Mija's loyalty and her love for her friend that started as children, and Young Sook doubted it at different times and then doubted it so deeply and was so scarred by that. But Mija's sacrifices, even once Young Sook had rejected her and, you know, wanted to treat her as an enemy, she persisted in loving her friend in every possible way she could, and in ways that outlasted her own life, in ways that extended into future generations. And that gave me cold chills. It just was beautiful. The power of the way she sacrificed to help Min Lee, she knew that their children coming together would do things for Young Sook that she couldn't even imagine. So that was the ending that really made the book worthwhile to me.
On that, when you look at it down the lineage, who loved well is reflected in the relationships that their children had. I mean, when you look at a great granddaughter knew this story, that speaks only to relationship, which, I mean, is beautiful to me. And it shows like someone who persistently is loving her people. And kind of in the way that when your kids are, you know, wayward and you love them anyway, but this is your best friend. Like, we don't always still do that with a best friend. We sometimes think, well, we've moved on, and that was just not available to her. No, we haven't moved on. I continue to love her. If she doesn't speak to me, that's okay. That's impressive.
Yeah. Heidi.
I hear what everybody's saying about feeling like the resolution was not satisfactory. And I think I can see why people would think that. It might feel abrupt, and I might feel like it doesn't make sense based on everything that has happened up to that point. But something that I've been thinking about is, like, I think in a lot of books, especially if we can call them fiction, we expect them to wrap up in a neat and tidy way. And our lives, like how rarely do our real lives wrap up in neat and tidy packages? Like they don't. I don't think anybody can say that about their real lives. And so from a perspective like that, an unsatisfactory ending kind of how it should end. Like, not that it has to, but like that is often what real life looks like, that the end might not be what we thought it should be or wanted it to be.
Well, because if you're going to tell a true story, even a made up story within a true story, there is cost. There's cost to our actions. And it all tied up neat in a bow at the end would have been lovely, but I agree that that might just not look like real. Like, there's a cost to ignoring for somebody for so long. Like, they might pass away and you never get a chance to say.
We have a chat about this. Anne said, am I the only one that saw the ending as a new beginning for the generations that are to come?
Yeah. Yeah. Anne, you are not the only one that saw it that way. And I wanted both perspectives, and every shade in between is valid. This kind of book invites us to see the events and the way it unfolds through our own lens and have our own feeling about it and our own opinion about it. But for me, I mean, first of all, I think one reason it feels abrupt is the modern habit for authors of not having a denouement. So people who have not been in English class in a while, the denouement, like when someone said, it would have been so great to see them swimming in the ocean after that moment. It comes to the point of the book, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, and then it just stops. And for those of us who love the classics and who love a heartwarming movie, and there's always a denouement. The main conflict is resolved, and then you ride off into the sunset. Frodo sails off to join the elves. You know, there's, you find out what happens. It doesn't just end at the end of the battle. And I liked the ending of this book a lot better the second time I read it, which I think is saying something. And the second time I read it, I had forgotten that, you know, the really hard scene we're all talking about is about in the middle. And so that is not the main conflict of the book. Mm-hmm. The main conflict, the tension of the book is, will their relationship be redeemed? Will there be forgiveness? And what we are seeing is Young Sook resist, resist, resist. And as someone said, her heart get harder and harder and harder and harder. And we realize that this glimpse we're getting in this modern storyline of this great granddaughter trying to reach her. I mean, by the very end, we're realizing that when she rejected them in the very first little section where she sees the great granddaughter for the first time and she's like, leave me alone, and runs off.
That's who she was.
But she knew that was her own great granddaughter too. Still reacted that way. That's how hard her heart was. And so by the end, when she sits on the beach and opens all of those envelopes with all of those rubbings and then all of the photos, and then has that last conversation, and it finally breaks through that. And I mean, this is literally the last page. She says, for years, people have pestered Young Sook to tell her story. Always, she said no. But now, the people asking carry within them the blood of Mija and Young Sook. Yes, she'll finally tell her story. She'll tell them about the pain she endured, but also about her closed heart that could not forgive. And what could show more that she's actually forgiven, then her next question is, will you take us into the sea? And she says, yes. Like, that is, we know what that means to her. We know that that is her world, and that she has, that wall has broken down and she has let them in. And that is the climax of the story. But then the author does the modern thing of, that's it. Bye. See you later. <We're all done>. That's my defense of the ending, but you don't have to buy it. You can have your own opinion. Erin.
So the after everything sad is untrue, the denouement that I wanted was her to find true forgiveness because Christianity is introduced a little bit. But of course, not every book can be a conversion story, and that would be silly to expect. But I think it does leave room for that question. You know, her dearest friend found forgiveness and redemption. Could she too? She's accepted these people who wear a cross. What's in store for her? So I thought that was kind of cool too.
And the labor and the wages. It's not too late if you're still breathing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question for you. Who is the hero of this story?
I think Misha is the obvious answer because she's not only the one who maintains the relationship the whole time and is constantly striving to do what's right, even though she struggles with it. She's the one who brings the redemption and forgiveness that makes the peace at the end of the story, even though, as was said before, that she's not even alive at this point, and she's still bringing peace.
Yeah.
And how beautiful is it that her granddaughter and great-granddaughter show up to this final meeting dressed to swim? They're expecting reconciliation. Mm-hmm. They show up prepared for it.
Yeah. Great point. I love that.
I did not catch that. Ugh.
Heather.
I agree that Misha was the hero of the book, but she was not a great hero for me personally. Mm-hmm. So it really bothered me when Young Sook's begging her in the moment, take my child. And the choice is the child dies or he goes into a home where he's beaten, but has a chance of life. It bothered me that she put that decision on Young Sook, that but I can't decide. You'll just have to do it. I did not like that. I can appreciate someone who is in an abusive situation might use different standards than if they weren't. But that was hard for me. I felt like, well, that was not a friendly. I get you don't want the kid to be beaten, but how about he's alive at least? Her child was beaten and he has a chance to go on and find love and get married. So that was hard for me. It was hard for me that, Young Sook, in fairness, wasn't really open to a lot of conversation, but I still felt like, why did you not shake her by the shoulders and tell her what you want to tell her. Give her some information, something. I feel like that would have helped. So I do agree with everything said about her being the hero. And it is amazing to me that she tells that story to her great granddaughter. And even in the telling of it, takes probably more fault to herself than was hers to take. Mm-hmm. She was not, I don't know how to say it. She wasn't a clean hero to me. She wasn't like cut and dry hero. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyone else have an idea of who the hero is? Kelly.
Oh, I was just going to say in response to that, I agree with what you're saying. She definitely wasn't a cut and dry hero, but you look back at all the way she was treated over her life for where she came from. She didn't, she just had such a terrible view of herself, and rightly so, not because she really should have, but you can understand why she did, the way her own family treated her, the way the grandmother treated her and matching her.
But what, just one really quick thing. I don't know who Heidi brought up that it's more like a real life ending. And then Heather would say that it's not like a super cut and dry, like woohoo, like all the way hero, but it just makes her look more real. You know, if she had done all the right things, then it wouldn't have felt so real. And so, I don't know, I feel like Misha she did the best that she could, given that she had the whole deck stacked against her from the beginning. So, he's listening to me. This is my one comment. Well, you know.
Well done. Well done, Catalina.
Remind me of how wonderful and all the things that I didn't quite catch on, the details. That's what I love about y'all.
Yeah, this for is sure. Really helping me too. Trisha, I want to say one more thing about Misha, and y'all can help me remember exactly what this was, but I feel like there was a kind of a definition of what a good mother is in the book that a good mother is someone who, and when I read it at the time, I was thinking, well, that's Mija, and that's not Young-suk.
Hmm. Wasn't it somewhere towards the end? Young-suk's mother-in-law said it.
There's one quote, a good woman is a good mother.
And what's right after that?
I don't know. That's from my quotes page.
Something about how she stays connected with or in touch with, but it had something to do with she stays in her children's lives, something to that effect. And I thought, well, Young-suk lost touch of her youngest.
Oh.
And she died and she didn't even know it. Oh, that got me. That was
Are you talking about where her mother-in-law says, your mother will always exist in you? Children exist, or parents exist through their children. Because, I mean, I feel like Mija existed through her children in a big way, because their story was alive. Mm-hmm. Not only did she live through things, but she shared those lessons. Not just the story, but the moral of the lesson.
Yeah, that's a great point. That might have been it. I'm not sure. But if listeners, if you are like screaming at, oh, I'm looking at it right now, please type it in for me.
The one thing that I kind of took a lot from this book is that I don't know a lot about Korean culture. I actually messaged a neighbor of mine that, you know, is Korean and is doing some work to recover some heritage knowledge and specifically even language. And so I was interested and just kind of shared, like, I don't know a lot, but I do know that othering is a powerful thing that every culture does. That's not culture, that's human. And we do it in different ways in different cultures and maybe have some prone spots. But when you begin to believe something about somebody and you don't talk it over with them, that power grows and grows and grows. And it doesn't even matter if you see for yourself. You have spent so many years believing it, it does not matter what your eyes see, because your eyes are now weaker than your brain and your memory and that you've created. And that has led people to turn in their neighbors that have for crazy things that has led to all kinds of atrocity in every culture around the world. And I think that was one of the like screaming voices through my head, is that Trisha Brené Brown says that I'm making up a story in my head, and you should check that with that person. I'm making up a story in my head that you believe da 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 da. Is that true? And stop that right there. Instead of spending years believing, like, you just decided to not save my kids because you don't want to. Like, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
In the chat, Beth, she found a quote. This isn't it, but it's the same gist. This was earlier in the book, I think. The sea is better than a mother. You can love your mother and she still might leave you. You can love or hate the sea, but it will always be there forever. The sea has been the center of her life. It has nurtured her and stolen from her, but it has never left. So it's the same gist of what I was thinking of. So thank you, Beth. But just the idea that Young-suk cut ties with her youngest and for not a good reason.
And so who is the villain of this story?
Well, Trisha, I'd like to know who you think the hero is.
Oh, I think the hero is Mija for sure.
Okay. What did you think, Elizabeth?
For sure.
I would lean towards Mija, but I don't think I came away thinking that I met a hero. I think I met a lot of people who did some good things and some bad things. And this was the sum of their story. I don't think I extracted a hero from it until she posed the question.
Yeah, just because Mija is the one that keeps seeking redemption. She never gives up. I mean, I have some people in my life who, for what I think are pretty petty reasons, have left me, and I have not sought them out like this. Now, we weren't as close to begin with. It was not like the bosom friend. But, I mean, it's admirable. I think I would have given up long before. I mean, like, kind of like what Heather was saying, like, she wouldn't even let her speak. Like, she would not even let Mija give an explanation. Like, there were a couple times she said, I have a couple things I just have to tell you. And she just would silence her. No, I don't want to hear it. I was there. Shut up. Like, basically.
I've made up my mind. Don't confuse me with the facts.
Yeah. And I would not, I mean, to keep writing those letters and sending those rubbings and those pictures of your children and grandchildren and great grandchildren through years and years and years, up until you know you're going to die when you have been nothing but rejected for what, like 50 years? That is heroic.
Yeah.
It's heroic. Who's the villain? I hope we have controversy about this. If you had to pick one.
Well, obviously that husband's pretty awful. He's not the villain of the story, but
who is?
I don't know. I mean, does there have to be a villain? I
mean, it's a super fun question.
I get it. Yeah, no, it is.
Young Sook is her own villain.
It's her own. That's a good point.
I don't think she's the villain, Angelina. I don't think Young Sook is the villain of the story, but she's her own villain. This entire book.
I can get behind that.
This entire book is the story of her being her own worst enemy.
Yes.
Heidi.
I have kind of an unconventional answer. I was going to say history itself is the villain in this case. Like, how much of the events we read, would they have taken place in the same ways if things happening on the world stage were not going on? If the Japanese had never occupied Korea, would we have been so blacklisted from the beginning? Like, if Americans had never, you know, entered the Korean stage after World War II, would everyone like have become suspicious of their neighbors for completely unreasonable reasons? I don't know. I don't think that would have happened, not in the same way. And so even their cultural tendencies aside, I couldn't see one person as a villain of this story, because all of them were products of what was going on around them and not necessarily always the product of their choices. They were making choices, that is clear, but not always were their choices the reasons they were suffering for what was going on. So anyway, history is the villain.
I see Miss Anne clapping. Would you like to add to that?
Yeah, the stuff they went through. Yeah, you know, we read the book in, you know, a week or 2 days or whatever it was, and we get this all this flood of stuff. What we're listening to is a dialogue that transpired over 60 years or so, and the constant dripping of influences from grandmothers and society around them, the impact of the Japanese occupation, and what they did, the stuff that they did to overcome, just learning how to dive like that. Going up to Vladivostok and diving in Arctic water, you know, the fact that that group of women had a physical being that could withstand more temperature awfulness than any humans on Earth. How much resilience is a human supposed to have? It's a story of the frailty of humanity. The villain in every life story is always Satan. Always. I'm probably the oldest one in this crowd right now. And you look back on 70 years, you know, I'm 76, gonna be 76 soon. You look back and people come through and, you know, oh, if I would have done this or if I would have done that, did I listen well? Did I not listen well? And you can't undo. There's no back arrow on our life. But what the author portrayed was, at some point, it stops with this generation. And because of Mia's training, it got down to the fourth generation, and it stopped.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It is. It's really powerful.
There's some comments about this. I just kind of, I wish we could just sit for a minute and dwell in that comment, Miss Anne. Oh, boy, that really got to me. Heidi, just to reiterate what she's already said, she said in the comments, I think if anything, this book teaches that any of us are capable of becoming what happens to these people, talking about villains. And Aaron says the women of Jeju are all the heroes.
To that, I would say, I don't seriously mean this as my answer to who's the villain, but I really did not come away feeling good about men in general. And not just because of the men of Jeju and how lazy they were, but when you look at all the atrocities that happened, that was all men. Men coming in. I mean, as I study history with my daughter, you know, we just see these men causing war after war after war, wanting something they can't have. And when she started describing the atrocities that men were doing in these villages, burning total villages down, women and children, who thinks of that? Who does that kind of stuff? And I know that there are evil women in the world, but I mean, for the most part, women don't. I don't think women do that kind of stuff. And what
happens? Women do it differently.
Well, yeah. What happened to her sister-in-law? And just the rape and the, it was just over and over. I thought, this book is not very good for my viewpoint on men.
And Heidi says in the chat, it was the discussions about men in this culture that made me wonder if the author had ulterior motives. There was a strong feminist theme, in my opinion. That was one of the things that I was angry about in like the first third, especially Heidi. I was, and then we got to the, you know, brutal scene and I was like, ah, this is not enjoyable, but yeah. And then I kind of felt better about all that by the end because I felt like the themes of forgiveness and the other things were so big that I'm not sure she was really pushing that.
I didn't think so.
I felt like it was more of a just telling this was how it was. But boy, I really was not sure for a while if I could trust the author. And that was one of those reasons.
So I want to tell you guys my theory on who the villain is. Are you ready?
Okay.
I would make a case from a plot perspective that the grandmother is the villain.
Yes.
Oh.
And that because the turning point in their relationship is when the grandmother makes sure that Mija marries that man, even though Mija tells her what happened, the kind of man he is, raped her upon meeting her. And the grandmother says, "You're the daughter of a collaborator. You deserve it."
Ooh, yeah. Trisha.
Thereby undoing all the good work mother did.
Her mother had done.
Forgiving that, bringing her into the fold, helping to provide for her, treating her as a human on her own merits, making sure she survived her childhood and didn't starve to death, training her to be a diver, all of that. And the grandmother undoes it in 1 week of work because she thinks she deserves it because of who her father was. And in that, she marries him off to a monster. And then that's what dovetails into what happens when the atrocities are going on. Because Amicia essentially doesn't even have her personhood by the time that scene happens.
And the grandmother teaches young Sook to never forgive. Right. So whereas Mija is passing on a message of forgiveness, the grandmother's doing the exact opposite. Good job, Trish.
Oh, man. Do you think the grandmother represents something broadly or about that culture? Or is it such as a part of their tradition? Or is it just the character? Does that make sense?
I think the grandmother represents the kind of, I want to say racism, but that's not the right word. The kind of prejudice that comes from being raised in something and exposed to something over years. She was raised under Japanese colonialism, and the people who cooperated with the Japanese were the traitors, and they were the people of their own kind who wouldn't stand up for them and who took advantage. It's exactly like the tax collectors in the New Testament, the people who collaborated with the enemy. That's why all the Jews hated the Jewish people who were taught about forgiveness and who were supposed to be the people of God, hated the tax collectors. And that's what this was. It was like her saying, well, your dad was a tax collector, and so you deserve whatever you get.
Do you think that experience,
sorry, go ahead. You can go first, Angelina. It's okay.
I was going to ask, do you think that experience maybe resonated with Mija in a way that made her grow into a more forgiving person?
Ooh.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so.
And I mean, you want to bring it into the New Testament and you're talking about hero characters. I mean, Mija was one who, like Jesus, forgave while they were yet sinners. And she is continually, like you said, writing these letters, even though she's not getting a response. She's standing at the door knocking, and she's not going to walk away. She's going to leave it up to Young Sook whether to open the door or not.
Yeah.
Ah, great, great point.
Well said.
Very good. Heidi.
Yeah, so Trisha just blew my mind, like, about the grandmother twist. Good grief. But as you were talking, I could not help thinking of the words in the Bible, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." Like, if that is not vengeance seeking, I don't know what is. And wow.
Well, and how much do we mess it up when we try to set it all straight? Like, it's out of vengeance when we often think, well, this is going to fix everything. Just in the same way, like, when, you know, when governments say, okay, the war's over, here's the country line, it never goes well, you know? And when we say, okay, you're here and you're here and you're here, and everybody, no, like, it's not going to help. It's going to make it worse because we don't have the vision to know what needs to be done, and it wasn't ours to do.
Great point. Because I was thinking so much while reading the book about the whole government's angle and how it was just kind of one regime over them after another, and they didn't have agency, and it didn't go well for them. So that's a great tie-in, connecting two things there, Elizabeth. You guys are all, this is, you guys are on a roll. This is.
I have one thing about the, you mentioned, going back to your comment, Amanda, about the husband might have leaned towards communism. And so that's like in the Four Winds. I read that and I'm like, it seems like it's really pro-communism, and I'm kind of buying it. Like, I get why they went into it. When you've never seen a good, healthy picture of democracy, you're not sure it exists. So here's what you think could, I know about a controlling government. Can we at least have a good one? Like, that was his idea, and I kind of get it. I mean, I have seen some things that lead me to go, okay, it doesn't exist, but I get it. I get why that might have been what he was thinking. I do think he was probably communist leaning, but also kind of didn't blame him with what he'd seen.
I thought the exact same thing. I did, because like one
like
of the characters...
We're all making decisions on our views.
Yeah, that the promises we hear from them sound good, and all we've known is this other thing, so let's try this new thing that sounds good. And reading the Communist Manifesto just at the very beginning, you're like, well, there are some, I kind of see where he was coming from with a couple of things. So there's parts of it that do sound good, or can sound good to people.
Well, and we as Americans, and unfortunately sometimes as Christians, start to equate democracy with Christianity.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, that's nowhere in the Bible.
Yeah. Right.
And really, if you look at some of the tenets of communism, that would sound, I mean, the idyllic view of communism might actually sound more like Christianity than democracy would. So
yeah. Yeah.
We can't fault him for wanting what just seemed like, you know, if it was in its truest form, might be a better thing than what they have had before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and he also wanted self-governance. Like, that's really what he wanted. He wanted Koreans to rule Korea. That's,
right.
I think that's really the core of what he wanted. Yeah,
right.
Of course.
Right. Anne said, please do these Zoom sessions more. Love this. I know, right? So Heather said, Amanda, was there enough poop discussion in this book for you? The system of three grossed me out.
Oh, so gross.
To answer the first question, no, I have a new standard. but yeah, I didn't even understand the system of three till it was spelled out even more clearly at the end. And I was like, oh my word, what does that mean? Like how close were, I was like, that's a little gross.
Not. Want pigs snuffling underneath the latrine. I don't think I could handle that.
I would be, I don't know, I don't need to go into detail about this, terrified to drop my drawers right over a pig. No, ma'am. I could not. It's nice that they didn't have to redig their outhouses. That is a good, smart thing. But whoa. She just kept talking about, like, they're right there. I can't.
Well, I think to me more like the job that every morning I'm going to go out and get water and I'm going to go find dung. You know, that's I mean, I don't know why I'm saying that would be gross. I have a dog, so I guess I go out and find dung every morning to clean up after my dog.
Same, friend, same.
But you don't take it home and make a fire out of it.
That is true. I don't end up bringing the smell into my house.
But that's incredibly resourceful. I will say that. That's something that I didn't even know that it would, I don't think I knew that it would burn, but I guess fertilizer plants, that's kind of the same idea. I don't know. I got a lot to Google tonight. 2 a.m. Does poop burn?
Well, in North America, the Native Americans went and got the buffalo chips and used that for fire.
Yeah.
I will say, while that was gross to read about, I did appreciate the author including a lot of information like that.
Yeah.
So you really did get a good sense of the culture of what they ate, of what they dressed in when they went diving, of even giving birth. I was like, oh my goodness, this is whole new world. They want to do this while they're in the sea. They're glad to go diving when they have morning sickness. Like, this is a different world. But it was helpful. I really did feel immersed in the culture. And that I did enjoy. I didn't always like the culture, but I did walk away feeling like I know this better now.
Yes.
So I did like that, even though the reading of the three was gross.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes to all of that.
I love it when I feel like I can really be immersed in another culture and really get a feel for what it was like to live there. Not just the big events, not the big drama, the day-to-day life. And maybe, you know, I was thinking, Kelly, when you were talking at the beginning and you were talking about how hard it was, like what a hard read this was, and totally respect that. And I was thinking, you know, you're right. There is a lot of sadness, like from the very beginning, like her first dive, that girl gets paralyzed, essentially, like gets brain damage. And then not too much later, her mom dies. Like, it's true, but it did not strike me that way while I was reading it. And I think it's just because I am so fascinated by the culture that just being immersed in all the details and everything they're doing, I find this culture so fascinating, even though I don't think I'd want to go live there. But to me, it is fascinating to just read about their everyday life and the diving and how they did that and how dangerous it was. And then when it gets to like the marriage and all the traditions around that and how it's done. And like you said, with the pregnancy and the babies, and then how do they cope with that? And I just found it endlessly fascinating twice. Like even the second time I was like, ooh, yeah, I forgot that. Oh, I forgot about they did that.
Yeah. How about she bought a wedding present for her husband who she didn't know who he was? You didn't know what he liked, but also it didn't matter. We don't need that many things. He's probably going to need a radio. I thought that was amazing. And it's a picture of culture, you know, like that feels shocking to me because I don't live in that time or culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like we need to move toward wrapping up. It's 10 o'clock at night, Eastern time. So I want to give everyone a chance for a final thought. Should you like to share a final thought? What are you taking away from this book? What was your favorite thing about this book? What will you carry with you? What was the biggest lesson you learned? What will you carry in your heart? Any of those kind of questions, I would love to hear the answer to. So I will say,
Trisha, there was one last really good question in the chat. There were
always
some other.
She never lets me stop. She just always has something.
One
I
more.
I know we're going long, but maybe if people want to even comment on this, you know, quickly. And there are some lovely poop comments still in the chat that we'll have to move on from, but they were funny. But Heather asks, do we agree with the statement to understand everything is to forgive?
I don't think so. I think it makes it easier to forgive when you understand things. Understanding everything is rarely something you're going to get. This would be my opinion. And forgiveness is, I have no idea why you did that. I don't understand it a bit. It stands in the face of everything I know, but I forgive you. That would be my thought.
Yeah, I agree with that, Elizabeth. And when I read that, I thought, I don't know that I agree with that. Do I have to have perfect knowledge to be able to forgive? that doesn't seem like it should be a requirement. And even when you do have perfect knowledge, that doesn't always mean it's going to change your heart. Like, mm-hmm. I think about when Job asked the Lord, you know, why'd this happen? What if God had told him, well, Satan asked me if he could do this, and I said yes. Would that have lessened Job's grief? Would it have, you know, healed the boils? No, it still would have been awful. So I think, I mean, really from Eve on, we have this idea that more knowledge is always better. And that's not true.
I agree with all of that. My brain went another place with it. To understand everything, my mind went to understand the main thing, the fundamental thing, which for Christian would be God forgives us. So when I understand that, then comes my forgiveness. Mm. But I agree with what y'all said too.
Yeah, Aaron. I feel like there's a little bit of a dichotomy between understanding and knowledge. Like there's the awareness that knowledge brings. But when we're talking about understanding, you're really talking about knowing the causes, being able to see the intention. I would agree that that still doesn't really get us to forgiveness, but it certainly helps tremendously to be in a place where you can receive the intention of the other person. I think she just moved one step past that by the end of the book, when she then was willing to teach them and to tell her story. She just got to understanding and then was able to, I feel like forgiveness entails a lot more self-sacrifice, sacrificing your own purposes, and putting the other person first.
Good. What are you going to take with you?
Well, this has confirmed my lifelong assumption that I don't want to get in a fight with an octopus. That's one thing I'm taking.
That's Catalina. What she's taking.
One thing that I took from this one and the last book that we read together is just the awareness of, wow, I can't believe the lives that other people live that I have no idea. Like,
yeah,
it kind of goes back to the episode that I did listen to, I love so much, about reading outside your culture. And I don't know how much of it is because I come from a different culture, and I see, like, you know, living here as, you know, one culture, and then I see growing up my culture, and yet there's just so much more. Like, people live in such different ways, and I mean, people have lived hard things in different, you know, different ways. You know, like Hosru suffer in a way that's completely different to Young Sook, you know, suffer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the beauty and the sadness of it all, and just learning, like, how much did I know about Iran? Not very much. How much did I know about Korea? Not very much. So just, I was just like, my eyes were just open to this whole other culture that I wouldn't have known otherwise easily enough. So anyway, I took that with me. And also just what y'all say about the forgiveness is, it's convicting. Trisha said, you know, like, I mean, we've all had people that have left our, you know, are not part of our lives. And we've had fights with friends. And just, how much are you willing to let yourself be rejected? I have a hard time, you know, taking that. And wow, it is convicting, and it stepped on my toes, but I loved it. Anyway.
Heidi.
The nature of grief and grieving is a really important subject to me. And I feel like this book touched on that in a way that I have not encountered in literature that I can remember. And there were a few lines kind of in that last section that just really struck me, insofar as Young Sook is kind of reasoning in her mind, like, who are we to say that one person has a grievance greater than another? Like, in some ways, they are all the same. Even if they look different, even if they felt different to me at the time than it felt. And I think people who have shared grief, as in the people in this culture, they were experiencing that in a way that was really different and hard in a way that maybe I haven't experienced a grief like that. And so I'm really glad to have found a story that so well spoke to what it is to grieve, and how long we live with those things. And that's hard.
Like going to the grief thing, the Kang sisters, you know, you kind of see them as silly all along, like these silly sisters. I mean, to me, they came across as these silly sisters. And then later on, when she talks to the sister whose daughter died, and she says, "How can you not be mad at your sister?" And to see this deep, really wisdom in forgiving her own sister for what, you know, what she could have held against if she had been Young Sook, would probably have held against her sister. And then also, I think right after that, was it right after that when she talked to the shaman and the things that the shaman talked to her about, that much like what you just said about the grief, that everyone on this island has gone through grief. You are not the only person. I really appreciated both of those viewpoints and kind of thought, why didn't someone say something to her sooner than this?
Yeah.
She'd been holding that grief and that anger for so long.
And everybody saw it.
Shaman talked to her about it. I found, for me, the biggest thing I came away from, or not the biggest, but one of the things I came away from, is the importance of communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways you see all those Hanyo come together and they talk about how they all talk, but what were they really talking about? Because it doesn't sound like they were always really talking about the important stuff. And maybe if they had, I get frustrated when I see a movie or a book where it's like, if you would just communicate with each other, if she would have just let her friend speak and just say her piece, she could have had that understanding 40 years, 50 years earlier. And that was kind of a lesson I thought, is just trying to communicate myself, my own feelings, and also how can I listen or encourage other people to communicate their feelings to me.
Yeah, totally. That was mine too. I was hearing John Mayer say what you need to say, like in the background.
Y'all have said so many things that really resonated with me too. I think I really got struck by just the small moments in this book and how much love was communicated through those. When Young Sook takes care of Mi-ja's house, and when she looks back on that, that is such clear evidence that she never stopped loving her, and she never would. But there's just so many little moments. The mandarin oranges that she gives her grandkids, just little things throughout the book that sometimes I get caught thinking I need to do big things. But it's this culture of little things that really shows the ties that they have. I think another time would be in the Poldock, just the friendships and the jesting and conversations that happen there. So
Young Sook and Mi-ja just sharing their hearts in Russia, laying on the same mat together, was such a beautiful small moment picture of just friendship. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel a group hug coming on.
I know. I'm going to need to go back and commonplace so many of your comments about this book. Yeah, I feel this has helped me. I don't want to say come around, but just come to a good place about this book.
Good.
All of the things that y'all shared, what you pulled out from it, have really helped me tonight.
Which is a perfect example of why book clubs are a thing.
Yes.
Absolutely. I was going to finish with a final quote from page 332. "Deep roots remain tangled underground," she recited. "Yo-chan's mother says that about the two of you, and I guess she's right. I'm not tangled with Mi-ja," I said, "but I wasn't speaking truthfully." Mm-hmm. I think that image of deep roots being tangled under the ground, inextricably in unseen, unknown, and unknowable ways, when you have had that kind of deep connection and friendship with someone. And the beauty of the second half of the book and the way Young Sook resists and resists and resists getting reconnected to her, even though she's trying to deny that she's staying connected by like cleaning her house and stuff. She's kind of in denial. But in the end, through Mija's pursual and the pursual of Mija's family and her family, she embraces again those deep tangled roots. And I will take that image with me from here.
Well, listeners, I want to know what you take away from this book. What did you think about it? Did you finish it? If not, why not? And do you think you might pick it up again in the future after listening to this? What did you think about the forgiveness in the book? Maybe the ending, but forgiveness versus pride. And we hit on several things, but there were some things we didn't get to. What do you think about the fate and destiny versus free will in the book? Mothers and daughters, the great cultural shift, generational differences, is Young Sook's traditional culture coming into more of a modern day situation, a way of life disappearing? And like Heidi brought up, grief and grieving. There's so much in here that you can spend a little bit of time on. Did you find the end redeeming? What'd you think about the writing? It sucked me in. Even when I was having issues with it, it still sucked me in. And the structure going back and forth in time. What did you think about all of that? Let us know in our private Facebook group. And if you haven't joined that, just search for Book Fair Podcast on Facebook.
Once again, thank you for listening. Thank you to our 15 beautiful listeners and readers who joined us tonight. And until next time, I'm Tricia.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Elizabeth.
And happy reading.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, subscribe to Book Fair Podcast.
Join our private Facebook group. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at chat@bookfairpodcast.com.
And you can help us continue to grow. Share an episode with a friend, mention us on social media, and leave a review in your podcast app. We'll see you next Tuesday.